class of ego present type average length in years total interval between lives astral life heave life lower mental causal moon men, second order bourgeoisie 200 300 40 160 260 on lower levels nil moon animal meant skilled workers 100 200 40 60 160 on lower levels nil moon animals. First class unskilled laborers 600 140 50 20 50 on lowest level nil moon animals, second class drunkards and unemployables 40 50 40 50 nil nil moon animals, third class lower of humanity 5 5 nil nil. A certain difference is produced by the mode of the individualization, but this difference is much less, in proportion, in the lower classes. Those individualized through intellect tend to take the longer of the two intervals mentioned, whereas those individualized in other ways tend to take the shorter interval. We shall return to this point and explain it in fuller detail presently. Generally speaking, a man who dies young tends to have a shorter interval than one who dies in old age, but is likely to have a greater proportion of astral life, because most of the strong emotions which work themselves out in the astral life are generated in the earlier part of physical life, whereas the more spiritual energy, which finds its result in the heaven life, is likely to continue until the end or near the end of the earth life. Thus, as we have seen, the total time spent in devachan depends upon the materials which the man has brought with him from earth life, that is to say, everything which is capable of being worked up into mental and moral faculty, all the pure thoughts and emotions generated during earth life, all the intellectual and moral efforts and aspirations, all the memories of useful work, and plans for human service. Not one is lost, however feeble or fleeting, but selfish animal passions cannot enter, there being no material in which they can be expressed. Nor does evil in the past life, though it may largely preponderate over the good, prevent the full reaping of whatever scant harvest of good there may be. The devachanic life may be very brief, but the most depraved, if he has any faint longings after the right, any stirrings of tenderness, must have a period of devachanic life, in which the seed of good may put forth its tender shoots, in which the spark of good may be fanned into a tiny flame. In the past, when men lived with their hearts fixed on heaven, and directed their lives with a view to enjoying its bliss, the period spent in devachan was very long, lasting sometimes for many thousands of years. At the present time, however, men's minds being so much more centered on earth, and so few of their thoughts being directed towards the higher life, their devachanic periods are correspondingly shortened. Similarly, the time spent in the lower mental and the causal heaven worlds are proportional to the amount of thought generated severally in the mental and the causal bodies. All that belongs to the personal self, with its ambitions, interests, loves, hopes and fears, have their fruition in the lower mental world, the world of form. Those belonging to the higher mind, to the regions of abstract, impersonal thinking, have to be worked out on the causal levels, the formless world. As the above tables show, the majority of people only just enter the causal heaven world, and pass out swiftly again. Some spend a large portion of their devachanic life there, a few spend there almost the whole. Thus, just as a man makes for himself his astral or purgatorial existence, so he decides for himself both the length and character of his heaven life, by the causes which he generates during his earth life. Hence he cannot but have both the amount which he has deserved, and also exactly the quality of joy which is best suited to his idiosyncrasies. Another factor of great importance and interest, is that of the intensity of the devachanic life, which varies with the different classes of egos, and which of course produces a considerable effect upon the length of the heaven life. In the table on p. 186, within the same group of egos, two types are shown which, though equal in development, differ greatly in their intervals between lives, one of them taking about 1,200, and the other about 700 years between lives. Now the amount of spiritual force generated is roughly equal in the two cases. But those who take the shorter interval compress a double amount of bliss into their heaven lives, working as it were, at high pressure, concentrating their experience, and so getting through nearly twice as much in any given period as the members of the other class. This difference, as was briefly mentioned a few pages back, is due to the way in which individualization was attained. Without entering into the details of individualization, which would be beyond the scope of the present volume, it may be explained that those who individualize gradually by intellectual development, generate a different kind of spiritual force, which gives them a longer devachanic life, than those who individualize through an instantaneous uprush of affection or devotion, and who take their bliss in a much more concentrated or intense form. If there be any difference in the amount of force generated, it appears to be slightly more in the case of those who take the shorter interval. Investigations have shown that there is great flexibility regarding intervals between lives, resulting in much variation in the rate at which egos work out their heaven lives. One important reason for this is the necessity of bringing together groups of people into incarnation at the same time, not only in order that they may work out mutual karmic interrelations, but also that they may learn to work together for certain great ends. There are, for example, certain groups of egos, known as servers, who come together life after life, in order that they may pass through similar preparatory experiences, that the bonds of affection between them may be knit so strongly that they will be incapable of misunderstanding or mistrusting one another, when the strain of the real work they are destined to do comes upon them in the future. The one great fact that the group is devoted to service overpowers all other considerations, and the group is thus brought together in order that it may perform that service as a body of people. In this, needless to say, there is no injustice, no one can escape one jot of the karma legitimately due to him. But the rate at which karma is worked out is adjusted to meet the particular circumstances of each case. Thus it sometimes happens that certain past karma would be cleared up rapidly in order that the person may be free to do higher work without hindrance from it. To this end it sometimes happens that a considerable accumulation of karma may descend upon a man at once in some great catastrophe, he thus gets rid of it rapidly, and his way is cleared before him. Of course, in the case of the great bulk of humanity, there is no special interference of this nature, and their heaven life works itself out at its ordinary rate. Differences in the time of working out karma, involving a difference in intensity in the life, are shown by a greater or lesser brilliancy in the light of the mental body. Chapter 22 Devachan, Further Particulars. Having studied some of the general features of Devachan, and its broad purpose, it will now be necessary to go over the ground again, filling in more details, and adding other particulars which could not, without overloading, be included in the first description. In spite of Devachan being to a certain extent illusory, as indeed is all manifested life, in varying degree, nevertheless there is much greater reality in the heaven life than there is in the earth life. This is clearly seen when we consider the conditions requisite for the attainment of Devachan. For, in order that an aspiration or a thought force should result in existence on the mental plane, its dominant characteristic must be unselfishness. Affection for family or friends takes man into the heaven life, as also does religious devotion. But only if the affection or the devotion is unselfish. Affection which is an exacting, selfish kind of passion, which desires mainly to be loved, which thinks of what it receives rather than of what it gives, and which may so easily degenerate into the vice of jealousy, has in it no seed of the mental development. The forces which it sets in motion will never rise above the astral plane, the plane of desire, to which they so clearly belong. Where there is no grasping, no drawing towards the self, no thought of return, there is a tremendous outpouring of force, which no astral matter can express, nor could the dimensions of the astral plane contain it. It needs the finer matter and the wider space of the mental plane, the energy generated belonging to that higher world. Similarly, the devotion of the religious devotee whose main thought is, not the glory of the deity, but how he may save his own soul, cannot lead to Devachan. But on the other hand, real religious devotion, which never thinks of self, but only of love and gratitude towards the deity or leader, and is inspired by ardent desire to do something for him or in his name, often leads to a prolonged heaven life of a comparatively exalted type. This would be the case whoever the deity or leader might be, and hence followers of the Buddha, of Krishna, of Ormuzd, Allah, or the Christ, would all equally attain their meed of celestial bliss, its length and quality depending not in the least upon its object, but upon the intensity and purity of the feeling. It is an error to suppose that a man on the astral and mental planes after death is merely working out the results of his past earth life. Broadly speaking, this is true of the ordinary man, yet nevertheless even whilst he is enjoying the bliss of his devachan, he is at the same time affecting others, and he is therefore producing results, that is, he is generating karma. This must be so, in the very nature of things, because thought is the most potent factor in the creation of human karma. Every force has the characteristic of the plane on which it is generated, and the higher the plane the more potent and the more persistent the force. In those cases, at present rare, in which, by raising the consciousness to the causal level, the higher mind and lower selves are unified, the consciousness of the ego is at the disposal of the man throughout the whole of his physical, astral and mental lives. Hence it follows that he is generating karma just as much at one period as at another, and he is able to modify the conditions of his life by the exercise of thought and will. But, apart from such cases of well-developed men, even an ordinary man produces, quite unintentionally and unconsciously to himself, three separate results during the whole of his heaven life. First, the affection which he pours upon the thought image he has made of his friend is a mighty power for good, which bears no inconsiderable part in the evolution of the ego of that friend. Affection is evoked from the friend, thus tending to intensify that admirable quality in him. Such an act is obviously one which generates karma. It is even possible that the effect of this action may be manifested in the personality of the friend on the physical plane. For, if the ego be modified by the affection showered upon the thought form it ensouls, it is possible that that modification may show itself in the personality, which is of course another manifestation of the same ego. Second, a man who pours out a great flood of affection, and evokes in response other floods from his friends, is clearly distinctly improving the mental atmosphere of his neighborhood. This atmosphere plays upon all the inhabitants of the world who are living in that atmosphere, devas, men, animals, plants, etc. This will clearly produce a karmic result. Third, a thought of unselfish affection or devotion not only calls forth a response from the logos to the individual who originated the thought, but also helps to fill the reservoir of spiritual force, which is held by the Nirmanakas. At the disposal of the masters of wisdom and their pupils for the helping of humanity, vide the astral body, p. 57. Magnificent as may be the result of such affection or devotion during physical life, it is easy to see that the response to the thought of an entity in devachan, sustained perhaps for 1,000 years, will make to Tihi Reservoir a considerable contribution, bringing to the world a benefit which is not calculable in any terms that we use upon the physical plane. From all these considerations it should be clear that even quite an ordinary man, who has yet no special development of consciousness, is nevertheless capable of doing a great deal of good during his life in devachan. Hence he is during that time actually making fresh karma for himself, and may even modify his heaven life while it is in progress. In the physical world, many of our thoughts are mere fragments. In devachan the dreamer contemplates such fragments and patiently works them out in every detail, in every possibility of splendid performance, living through them with a vividness which nothing on earth can rival. He builds, shapes, molds them into all their varied possibilities and tosses them into the world of form. Others may then pick them up, and be inspired by them to undertake schemes of reform, works of philanthropy, and so forth. Thus from the radiant thought stuff of some solitary dreamer may arise wonderful changes, his dreaming helping to recreate the world. It must, however, be borne in mind that, owing to the limitations which the ordinary man imposes upon himself in devachan, he cannot originate a fresh line of affection or devotion. But his affection and devotion, along the lines which he has already decided, will be distinctly more powerful than they ever could have been while he was laboring under the heavy limitations of the physical body. This point will bear a little further elaboration. In order to understand the relation of a man in devachan to his surroundings, we have to think, 1, of the matter of the plane as molded by his thought, and, 2, of the forces of the plane as evoked in answer to his aspirations. We have already seen how the man molds the matter of the plane into thought images of his friends, and how egos of the friends express themselves through the images. There are also other living forces about him, mighty angelic inhabitants of the plane. Of these, many are very sensitive to certain aspirations of man, and readily respond to them. But the main point to bear in mind is that both his thoughts and his aspirations are along those lines only which he has already prepared during earth life. It might perhaps have been imagined that when a man rises to a plane of such transcendent force and vitality, he would be stirred to entirely new activities along new lines, but this is not the case. His mental body, as we saw previously, is not by any means in the same order as his lower vehicles, neither is it so fully under control. It has in the past been accustomed to receive its impressions and incitements to action from below, chiefly from the physical, and sometimes from the astral. It has done very little in this way of receiving direct mental vibrations at its own level, consequently it cannot suddenly begin to accept and respond to them. Practically, thus, the man does not initiate any new thoughts, but is limited to those which he has previously entertained, and which form the only windows through which he can look out on his new world. Hence, a colorless, flavorless personality necessarily has a colorless, feeble devachanic state. A man thus takes into devachan just the mental furniture he is, neither less nor more. It is clearly, therefore, of great importance that during physical life he should make his thinking as accurate and as precise as possible, otherwise he will very much limit the usefulness of his devachan. From this point of view, devachan is a world of effects, not causes, each man being limited to his own individual shades of perception and his capacity to appreciate. The more points of contact he has with the outer world, the more will be the starting points or foci for development in devachan. On the other hand, devachan, from the point of view of the next life, is essentially a world of causes, because in it all experiences are worked up into the character which will be brought forward when the man returns into incarnation. Devachan is thus the direct result of one life on earth, and prepares the way for the next life on earth. The way in which man's vision is determined and limited by the windows through which perforce he must look, may best be studied by taking an actual example. Let us take that of music. A man who has no music in his soul has no window at all in that direction. A man, however, who has a musical window is in the presence of a stupendous power. The degree to which he is able to respond will be determined by three factors. Pursuing the analogy of the glass in a window, we may call these three factors, 1, the size of the glass, 2, its color, 3, the quality of its material. Thus, if while on earth the man was able to appreciate only one class of music, he will obviously now be limited to that extent. His ideas of music may also be colored, so as to admit only certain vibrations of music, or they may be of such poor material as to distort and darken everything that reaches him. Assuming, however, that his window is a good one, he will receive through it three distinct sets of impressions. First, he will sense that music which is the expression of the ordered movement of the forces of the plane. There is truth behind the poetic idea of a music of the spheres, for on these higher planes all movement and action produce harmonies of sound and color. All thought, both his own and that of others, expresses itself in this way, in a lovely yet indescribable series of ever-changing chords, as of a thousand aeolian harps. The musical manifestation of the glowing life of the heaven world forms a background to all his other experiences. Second, among the inhabitants of the mental plane there is an order of devas, or angels, who are specially devoted to music and who habitually express themselves by its means to a fuller extent than the rest. They are known to the Hindus as Gandharvas. The man who has musical appreciation will certainly attract their attention, will come into contact with them, and with the music they create, and will assuredly acquire much from that intercourse, for they will use all kinds of overtones and variations which were previously unknown to him. In this way he will eventually emerge from the heaven life far richer than he entered it. Third, He will listen with keen appreciation to the music made by his fellow men in the heaven world. Many of the great composers are there, pouring forth far greater music than any which they knew on earth. Much of the inspiration of earthly musicians is, in fact, but a faint echo of the music on the mental plane which they have dimly sensed. The experience of a man who was a painter would be similar. He also would have the same three possibilities. 1. He would perceive the natural order of the plane expressing itself in color as well as sound. 2. He would perceive the color language of the devas, an order of beings who communicate with one another by flashings of splendid color. 3. He would perceive the color creations of great artists on the mental plane. The same possibilities, mutatis mutandis, are open to a man in devachan, in all other directions of art or thought, so that there is an infinity for him to enjoy and to learn. In considering the action and reaction between the man in devachan and the thought image he makes of his friend, there are two factors to be taken into account. 1. The degree of development of the man himself. 2. The degree of development of the friend. If the man himself is undeveloped, the image he makes of his friend will be imperfect, many of the higher qualities of the friend not being represented. Consequently, the ego of the friend may be able to make but little use of the image, there being nothing through which he can express some of his qualities. Nevertheless, even at the worst, the expression of a friend through an image is much fuller and more satisfying than it ever was in the physical life. For in earth life we see our friends but partially, our knowledge of them must always be exceedingly defective, and our communion with them imperfect. Even when we do believe we know our friend truly and wholly, it is still only part of him which is in incarnation that we can know, there being far more behind in the real ego which we cannot reach at all. In fact, if it were possible for us to see with mental vision the whole of our friend, the probability is that he would be quite unrecognizable. Certainly he would not be the one whom we thought we had known before. If, on the other hand, it is the friend who is undeveloped, even when a good image is made, there may not be sufficient development in the friend to enable him to take due advantage of the image, that is, he may be unable to fill completely the image of him that has been made. This, however, is unlikely, and could take place only when a quite unworthy object had been unwisely idolized. Even then the man who made the image would not find any change or lack in his friend, for the friend is now better able to fulfill his ideal than he ever was during physical life. Hence the joy of the man in devachan is not in any way diminished. Whilst an ego can fill hundreds of images with those qualities which he possesses, he cannot suddenly evolve and express a quality which he has not developed, merely because someone has imagined him to have developed it. Hence the enormous advantage of forming images of those, such as the masters, who are capable of rising above even the highest conception that the lower mind can form of them. In the case of a master, a man is drawing upon a depth of love and power which his mental plummet can never sound. But in every case, the ego of the friend is reached by affection, and whatever may be its stage of development, it at once responds by pouring itself into the image which has been made. Even the feeblest image that can be made is at any rate on the mental plane, and, therefore, is far easier for the ego to reach than is a physical body two planes lower down. If the friend is still living in the physical body, he will of course be entirely unaware in his physical consciousness that his true self, or ego, is enjoying the additional manifestation, but this in no way affects the fact that the manifestation is a more real one and contains a nearer approximation to his true self than the one on the physical plane, which is all that most of us can as yet see. From all these considerations it follows that a man who has made himself generally beloved, who has many real friends, will have a large number of thought images in the devachans of his friends, and will thus evolve with far greater rapidity than a more ordinary man. This result is obviously the result of the karma of his development within himself of the qualities which make him so lovable. The student will now clearly perceive why the personality, which we know on the physical plane, does not converse with its friends in devachan, but the real man, the ego, does do so, acting through the thought image, which has been created on the mental plane. The principle may perhaps be rendered still more clear by a practical example. Suppose that a mother, being somewhat narrow in her religious views, died, leaving behind her a well-loved daughter, and that the daughter later on broadened her religious ideas. The mother would continue to imagine that her daughter was still Orthodox, and she would be able to see only as much of her daughter's thought as could be expressed by Orthodox ideas. She would be unable to grasp the wider religious views which her daughter had now adopted. But insofar as the ego of the daughter profited by what the personality had learned, there would be a tendency on her part gradually to widen out and perfect the conceptions of the mother, though always along the lines to which the mother was accustomed. There would be between them no sense of difference of opinion, and no avoidance of subjects of religion. The above considerations apply to a person of ordinary development. In the case of a more advanced man, who was already conscious in the causal body, he would put himself down consciously into the thought image provided for him by a friend in Devachan, as into an additional mental body, and work through it with definite intention. If he happened to acquire additional knowledge, he could thus directly and intentionally communicate to this friend. In this way the masters work on such of their pupils as take the heaven life, and alter their characters immensely. A man who makes for himself an image of a master is thus able to benefit enormously from the influence which the master is able to pour down into it, and to receive definite teaching and help. Two friends may know far more of each other at the mental level than they ever could when physically alive, because each has now only the one veil, that of the mental body, cast over his individuality. If a man in Devachan has known only one side of his friend during physical life, it will be only through that side that the friend can express himself in the heaven world. But, although he is largely confined to that side, he can express that aspect of himself much more fully and satisfactorily than ever before. The expression, in fact, is fuller than the man now in Devachan was ever able to see on the lower planes. We have already seen that an ordinary man in Devachan is living in a shell of his own thoughts. He has thus shut himself off absolutely from the rest of the world, that is, both from the mental plane and from the lower planes. But, although he is shut away from the full enjoyment of the possibilities of the mental world, he is not in the slightest degree conscious of any curtailment of his activities or his feelings. On the contrary, he is filled with bliss to the very utmost of which he is capable, and it is to him incredible that there can be any greater joy than that which he is himself experiencing. Thus, although he has shut himself within certain limits, he is quite unconscious of those limits, and within them he has all that he can possibly desire or think. He has surrounded himself with images of his friends, and through those images he is actually in closer contact with his friends than he has ever been on any other plane. The man in Devachan by no means forgets that there is such a thing as suffering, because he remembers clearly his last life, but he understands now many things that were not clear when he was on the physical plane, and the delight of the present is for him so great that sorrow seems to him almost a dream. The shell on the mental plane may be compared to the shell of an egg on the physical plane. The only way to get anything into the shell of the egg, without breaking it, would be to pour it in from a higher dimension, or to find a force whose vibrations are sufficiently fine to penetrate between the particles of the shell without disturbing them. The same is true of the mental shell. It cannot be penetrated by any vibrations of matter of its own level, but the finer vibrations which belong to the ego can pass through it without disturbing it in the least, that is, it can be acted upon freely from above, but not from below. From this follows two effects. 1. Vibrations sent out from the mental body of the man in the shell cannot strike directly upon the mental body of his friend, nor can he generate a thought form which could travel through space and attach itself to the friend in the ordinary way. This could happen only if the man were able to move freely and consciously about the mental plane, which of course he cannot do. 2. The thoughts of his friend cannot reach the man in his devachanic shell, as they do in ordinary life on the physical or astral plane. We see, therefore, that all the difficulties produced by the mental shell round a man in Devachan are completely overcome by nature method of the direct action of the ego on the thought image which the man has created. It follows also from the conditions of man in Devachan that he can no longer be recalled to earth by spiritualistic methods. In spite of men in Divachan being not readily accessible to influence from without, nevertheless one who can pass into the mental world in full consciousness can affect those in Divachan to some extent. Thus he could flood them with thoughts of affection, for example, and although these thoughts may not be able so far to penetrate the shells as to make those within the shells conscious of the author of the thoughts, yet the stream of affection can act on the occupants of the shells much as the warmth of the sun can operate upon the germ within the egg, hastening its fructification and intensifying any pleasurable sensations it may be supposed to have.